Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. You know what time it is. Time for the Project 223 podcast. Welcome. Today, we've got a great guest in the studio, Josh Dreyfus from Pacific Armament Company Gun Shop. And it's more than just a gun shop. They've got all kinds of stuff there. We're going to get into that in the podcast. Josh joined us today in the studio at the Eagle's Nest. Beautiful sunshiny day, looking across the valley at some snow-capped peaks. It's awesome. Springtime is in the air. Hopefully you're ready to enjoy a great time hearing about a local businessman who is providing freedom tools for the average citizen so that you and I can be better prepared for the coming dangers and troubles ahead. So without further ado, our interview with Josh Dreyfus from Pacific Armament Company. All right, I'm sitting here with Josh from Pacific Armament Company out of Marysville, Washington. Josh, it's fun to have you in the studio today.
Hey, Brent. How are you doing?
Great, great. I'm really excited to have you here. You know, we got lots to talk about. Talk about a little bit about your past and stuff and what's got you to the place where you are today. A great new gun shop in Marysville. Not necessarily new, but in a new facility, right?
Yes.
All right, cool. So we'll get to that and talk about it. So yeah, it's been fun getting to meet you a little bit and getting to know you and spend a little money in your store.
Yeah, it's been a very crazy last couple of months.
It has been.
So I'm glad to have you in.
Business has been up right now, huh?
Yeah, to put it mildly. A lot of people freaking out, a lot of people trying to get into the last little bits of things before they're...
Yes.
Rights are taken away.
Yes.
Again.
Yes. So we'll talk
down the rabbit hole.
Yes, we are going to talk about that and why people are panicking here at the last minute and possibly the last minute. And so, yeah, I was came in the other day and there was a line to the door.
Yeah, it's been that way. We're running super shorthanded, as everyone else has probably felt, and the labor pool being not what it is, and finding people that are trustworthy to be able to run a gun shop and be there and whatnot. It's causing unfortunate lines for what we've got going on, but we'll get everyone taken care of the best we can.
Hard enough to find people that'll flip a burger and make you change, much less somebody reliable enough and trustworthy enough to work in a gun store. So
yep.
I can't imagine your pain. Yeah, well, that's cool. We're going to talk about that and a lot of other cool stuff today on the podcast. It's kind of funny because as we talk about quite a bit, you know, Project 223 preparedness, Proverbs 22:3 in the Bible says the wise man sees trouble and prepares, but the fool suffers and keeps going. And so we like to be wise, and the people that listen to our podcast are wise. So we don't like to rush in and out. If the sky's falling one day, we don't go rushing off to do something and then slack off when everything seems fine. We like to keep that constant level of preparedness. And it's pretty cool, you running a gun store, that you day in, day out, whether there's tons of ammo on the shelf or whether it's empty based on emotions. I guess you see that quite a bit, the panic buying and panic preparedness.
Yes. It is weird having kind of what feels like a finger on the pulse of everything, especially with the way the markets are moving, the way people are thinking, what's in the news cycle dictates a lot of what we do on a day-to-day basis. So
you definitely get a chance to see things from a very interesting perspective, and that's why we wanted to have you on today, Josh. Let's talk a little bit about your past, Josh. You grew up in the area in Washington State?
Yeah, from Yakima. I actually was born, stayed there a couple of years, moved to Redmond in 84, and graduated from Redmond, and has been largely in the area except for the few years that I was in service for. But this is still home for me.
Nice. So you came from the east side to the west side of the mountains? That's the wrong way.
The dry side's the right side. There is no better place than here for calling home. The mountains, the rainforest,
you talk about the Puget Sound region and Western Washington?
Washington in general.
I mean,
you go anywhere, any part of this state is gorgeous.
Sure.
I love the east side. I still consider that home, but for having spent the majority of my life on the wet side of Washington, there's just no better place to be. honestly. I've been to a lot of states. I've been to a lot of places, at least in this country. This will always be my home.
Yeah. No, I was in Florida for a while, boot camp and nuclear power school and all that, and I spent some time in Idaho. I do like Idaho, but it was flipping cold when we were there. And then down in San Diego. And San Diego is pretty nice. It's hard to beat San Diego. But then down there, we didn't have the four seasons, really. I mean, you had three, and then, you know, it got a little below 70 for a few weeks. But you know, there was trade-offs right down there. There was this high crime. It was a very high cost of living. If you wanted to live near the beach, you know, it was super high cost of living. Yeah. And then if you went out away from the beach, you're cooking in the summertime. So, you know, same thing for me, right? No place like home. We come home here and you've got, you know, reasonable seasons. You're not getting major, you're not getting tornadoes and hurricanes and stuff like that. You got the mountains. We're looking out the window here in the Eagle's Nest studio, and we got beautiful sunshine and mountain peaks. And just on the other side here, a couple miles away, we got ocean sound. And so, yeah, I agree with you. I love this area.
Yep.
Well, and that's the frustrating thing too, is that, you know, when you get the cities and some of these coastal areas and you get people with these, some of these leftist views and people that that are bringing politics that come in and ruin the communities, and they destroy these wonderful areas with terrible politics. Yep. And that's pretty sad to me that, you know, you have this area that's so wonderful, but yet people can make such horrible decisions that cause things to just not be enjoyable. A lot of people are like, well, I'm moving out of here, moving from a, you know, this blue area to, you know, red state Idaho or Wyoming or whatever, which that's cool. But yeah, do we want to give up ground?
Yeah. I do not really have friends or make friends with those that choose to just pass this problem off to their kids. The policies that are in place, the policies that are trying to be implemented here shortly, do absolutely nothing for us as a population, as a citizenry of this country, as anything. Just covering your own butt, not being able to make those decisions or not be able to purchase the tools that you need to do that job, all dictated by one particular group of people. I mean, let's be honest. We know where all of this is coming from, where all of this is stemming from, and I'm fed up with it.
Yeah.
It's a disgusting feeling seeing and remembering what the world was 20 years ago and how quickly we have turned on ourselves with this.
Yeah.
And the policies that are running rampant, and we're allowing to continue on. We're responsible for our own demise here as far as this is concerned, and it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. Well, not to get too, we start getting pretty political pretty quick on this show here, you know, but it's tough because a lot of the things that are near and dear to our hearts are things that are being threatened right now. Mm-hmm. And that's tough, you know, and when you have a lifestyle of wanting to be self-reliant, of being resilient, of being your own first responder, things that we talk about on our show that we want to encourage people to be able to not be dependent on the government to take care of every little problem, right? Because there will be a day when they won't be there to help you. And then what are you going to do, right? And so I see it in my job over and over and over every shift as a fire captain. The drugs out there. Well, last night we were on like a 5-hour SWAT standoff, and we had somebody else. We had another multiple ODs. I heard a story just the other day of a little 2-year-old kid that was OD'd on fentanyl that the guys had to revive, and they had gotten into their parents' stuff. So, you know, a lot of these policies, they affect the world around us, and that affects us. And so it's hard not to. It comes a point in time where we need to start addressing those. But we're gonna get into that more and more. But anyways, it's more about you and your past and stuff. Just what made you into the person that you are today. You got a family there today that you're with?
No, actually, younger brother's down in Graham, works for Boeing, married, two kids, and I have my parents, aunts and uncles, and everyone's over on this side now. My grandma passed in 2005, And that was the last.
So no family over there, but you've got your family is mostly over
everyone's
here.
Everyone's yeah, sorry.
No, that's okay. Yeah.
And yeah. Everyone that's around is still over on this side, so we're still pretty close.
Nice,
so.
Nice. And you got a little one that you
take? Do. Emma, 7, with my girlfriend Danielle, and finally just moved back into what was the old shop. Now finally back to my house, with the exception of some leftover NFA items, but hopefully we'll get my house completely back here one of these days.
Yeah, so on that, so you were running your gun store out of as your FFL out of the out of your residence there?
Yep. So the house we bought in October 16 turned into a complete project, total rebuild and everything else, including the shop area. So had the first ATF inspection when it was still just bones in the garage, and we were just getting ready to start sheetrocking, and it started out with that. Got a couple of glass cases and had the work table and the bench and everything, and my parents fronted me the first cash to get the first couple of guns That's going awesome. And this was all while I was still on active duty orders, and so I was on base 07 to 1500, 1600, whatever. And then I'd work on the house for a couple hours. And then I was open 6 o'clock in the evening to 11 o'clock at night during the weekdays. And
crazy. Well, then the thing that's cool to me is that you had a passion. We're going to talk some more a little bit about your past. So we keep jumping ahead, but you had a passion for something, firearms, right?
Yep.
And you enjoyed that and you enjoyed helping other people learn about them and get them. Yep. And you turned that into a business.
Yeah. So having been from Yakima, guns were a pretty regular part of our existence. That carried through with Boy Scouts, made Eagle, did all the...
You're an Eagle Scout?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yep. And that was another reason why I ended up in the Coast Guard, was because they had the direct petty officer enlistment program as an Eagle Scout.
Oh, that's
allowed me to
cool.
go in as an E4.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So now how long, on that a little bit, how long, when did you start? Did you start in Cub Scouts and everything when you were a little kid?
Yeah. Trying to remember if the camps that they had there had the rifle ranges and whatnot as a Cub Scout. I know like Camp Parsons Back was where I was at for Boy Scouts, went through all the NRA programs and did all the award programs and everything for the 22s. So yeah, that carried through with Scouts. And then the Maritime Enforcement Rate was being stood up 2010 when I got into the Coast Guard. So did that. But my unit found out that I was the resident gun nut and transferred into the armory out of security section.
Nice.
And became a firearms instructor for the Coast Guard. Started doing that, just the base level stuff. Never did any of the tactics or any of the fancy stuff. But everything was always in the basics. Same thing with all the Boy Scout programs. Same thing with my family. How we all learned how to shoot guns and everything was all taught. And just, it started really young and it kept going through every facet of everything that I was ever doing. So by the time the shop had opened, I had a multitude of jobs and everything that I had gleaned how to be and how not to be as a business owner. I felt confident enough to be able to get this thing going. So by the time we opened the old shop in 2017, we still had enough going on with the active duty pay and whatnot to be able to get the shop started. And one thing led to another. And originally it was just going to be gunsmithing. All I wanted to do was just build pistols.
Oh, really?
That was it. I never had intentions of actually being a full retail shop or anything like that. We just wanted to keep it small, keep it at the house. But everything that had happened basically with all of the other political crap that had been going on, 594, when that passed, that created a ginormous panic.
So for somebody that maybe doesn't know about 594, do you mind kind of explaining that a little bit or what?
594, if I recall correctly,
was Washington State.
Yeah, Washington State's private party transfer rule.
Mm-hmm. Was that an initiative or was that a house?
That
house
was...
Bill? We'll look it up, but yeah.
I think that one was initiative because I remember we had all the pages. That was where we got to know Sporting Systems down in Vancouver, who runs most of the initiative signing. One of those ballot sheets that you ever saw in the last bunch of bills that we were trying to petition for or against. They were pretty much the front runners for funding all of that.
Yeah, and that was initiative. Yeah, initiative funding for
Yeah, so 594 caused a panic that kind of put us on the map with the city because of business rules. Technically, we were outside of the spec for that. We were supposed to do everything appointment only, but, being a business, we're listed, people find out about us, whatever, show up. And it just started running like a normal business. We started doing more transfers, started bringing more stuff in. Customers became friends that became coworkers. And this whole thing has just morphed into this monstrosity that we've created that's now sitting in a new shop.
Well, you know, it's cool to see somebody that has a passion for something and to be willing to step out and turn that passion into a business, into something that's, and it takes courage to do that. I mean, imagine it's been a lot of hard work and a lot of struggle to do that.
Yep. Lots of sleepless nights, lots of panic attacks, lots of digging deep and finding yourself and figuring stuff out and seeing what works and what doesn't work and tripping along. And
I'd ask you this: to somebody out there that's listening to the podcast and they have thought about starting a business, they've thought about doing, whether that be a gun store like yourself or doing some training or writing a book, whatever it might be. What do you have any advice for somebody like that has something they're thinking about, but maybe they're like, oh, I couldn't do it, or they have that imposter syndrome that, you know, it's not, I can never be that person. And
I mean, flat out, do it. Whatever you need to do, whatever your passion is. As far as the business is concerned, people have a knack for being able to pick up on stuff when people are passionate about it. They own it. It's their thing. It's their whatever. It doesn't matter what it is. There is such a drive for people going back into small businesses and stepping away from the major corporations and the big dogs and trying to find that little new thing or place that you can one up your friends with and everything, you know. Yeah. But small business is always going to be prevalent. It's always going to be a thing. And there is no reason whatsoever why you shouldn't be doing whatever it is that you want to do, whatever business you want to do, whatever idea or adventure that you want to get into. And you have one life at this, and doing it, making money for someone so they can buy another Bentley or buy another vacation house or whatever is not the way you should be spending gorgeous days like this.
Or working for a company that actively works against the things you and your family believe in.
Yeah. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. The hypocrisy with everything, with people's mentality, is everywhere, with the products they buy and and a lot of it's just trickery. They just don't know. They don't get into the details about it and whatnot. And fortunately, more people, I feel, are starting to catch on to that. They're starting to do more research. They're starting to pay more attention. And I think it's scaring a lot of people that want to maintain control.
Exactly. Yeah. No, you think years back and, you know, you didn't really think about what Procter & Gamble or Johnson & Johnson
they were healthy
companies. Or Verizon or whatever company that you're getting a service from or a product from. You didn't really care because, for the most part, too, a lot of them didn't really come out and stand up for controversial subjects and pick a side. You know, they did business, right? They produced a product and they sold it to their customers. And now more and more people want to, they call it virtue signaling, right? Hey, everybody, look at us, you know, look at us stand up for this social, you know, justice cause or whatever it might be. And they don't realize that over half their customers think another way than that. You know, I just don't, it doesn't make sense to me.
No, it does not. And that's why, as far as our shop is concerned, as small as we are, you see, you know, when you come in the door, we don't even really have a uniform or anything. We're just dudes. We swear, we talk, we drink, we are having fun doing what we're doing. Everyone's been, for the most part, super cool about it. Obviously, we get a few unsavory folks coming through, but that's just with business. But everyone's kind of self-regulating, self-policing. Everyone knows what's going on. Everyone believes in this largely the same causes and have the same mentality. And it's been a big driving force with the shop being bigger than what I was originally intending it to be. But as a unintended byproduct, to be able to get more people to come together and learn or network the lo-fi way face-to-face, I mean, that's what I would hope for, you know, that's what I call success as far as the shop is concerned. It's chaotic. Nothing happened the way that I was intending for this place to happen. So, you know, the ability to pivot and think on the ball quickly to the next thing or the next revenue stream or the next thing that we can do to help somebody or help a group of people train to, it's a fun thing.
Nice.
It's straining, but it's fun.
Do I sense a reality show in the works?
Shit.
Or we get a TL, what is it? History no, Channel to get a camera not. Crew in there?
No. It would be nothing, but you would just see pictures and nothing but beeping and blurping.
Oh, that's nice. No, I walked in and you got some pretty cool, all kind, you know, lots of firearms and accessories, but you got a cool fabricated out of steel, like yep. cigar holder ashtrays and a little
we actually have our tobacco license too.
Oh, do you really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool. And a little tumbler holders for looked like a nice glass of whiskey would go in there. Yep. And
yeah, so one of the big components to the shop doing what it's doing is trying to bring in as many local companies, you know, almost sort of kind of treat it like a farmer's market of sorts. Like we've had guys that have approached us about wanting to sell their knives and shops like, yeah, man, we'll sort it out. We'll treat it like a consignment, make it real easy as far as this stuff is concerned. So we get some of the fabricators in and that's where the cigar holders and whiskey glass holders came from. There's also earrings and we got knives coming in and we're doing a full line CBD isolate products for both canine and human consumption. And now we're breaking into coffee as well.
That's crazy. Well, and it's interesting is that, you know, you see more and more of that where people are, and we talked about earlier, moving out of the conventional streams of consumering, and they're moving to doing their own businesses and buying from people that are like-minded to them and doing side businesses and turning those into their own you know, full-time businesses and not, like we said, working for the man, right?
Yep.
And, you know, and it's not that it's, you know, there's companies out there that do great things and provide, well, you know, money for people to live and benefits. But like say, if a business doesn't represent you and the things that you believe in, if they actively work against you and the things you believe in, you know, yeah, how long do you want to continue to work for somebody like that?
Right.
So, but yeah, and just, you know, like say, getting to where you were, even just going back and up a little bit, some of the stuff you did in the past, you sounds like you did a lot of interesting stuff that's kind of made you into the person you are right now. You did some construction out of high school. You said right around 9/11 is when you got out of high school. And
yep. Graduated June 01, was working for a dirt work contractor doing admin stuff at the time. And 9/11 happened. And
where were you on 9/11? Do you remember?
Ballard. We were right down on the waterfront, the Eminex Helix project. Got there first thing in the morning and one of the big Hurricane, I think it was like 6'8", one of the dirt work drivers was like, yeah, plane hit the tower in New York. And we're like, what? Sit there and we go in, you know, we have the old CRT TVs and whatnot and the big job shack that I think it was Skanska that was running the job site at the time. Sat there and watched the second plane and
crazy.
The rest was history. So tried getting in through other channels. Medical was a big issue with me through MEPS. So that took a number of years to get stuff cleared up and whatnot and finally got in service in 2010. So
that was in the Coast Guard Reserve there?
Yep.
Nice.
Yep. So did a direct petty officer enlistment program with them.
Where did you go to, did you send your boot camp?
Yeah, Cape May, New Jersey.
Okay.
Basically, it was a refresher course of sorts in customs and courtesies. It was a great time. It scared the hell out of me just like any other boot camp. So that helped kind of break my confidence mold as far as that was concerned.
Yeah. Then where were the different places where you were stationed and where you worked at?
I was with one unit the entire time. Port Security Unit 313 Everett. That was also a big reason why I ended up with the old shop in Marysville was because it was, you know, okay. Just a hop, skip, and a jump away from the base there.
So they're right down there on the Navy base there. Yep. In Everett? Yep.
And then the last 6 months I was stationed down at the National Maritime Center, whatever the first Ave, federal building, grading pilot charts and boat licensing and tests and getting guys checked in and whatnot.
Fun.
So more admin stuff, but that was actually, I learned a lot, made some good friends there.
Sure. Yeah, and you did a few other things on the side. You did worked in automotive industry a little bit and worked in tow trucks for a little bit.
Yep. Drove truck, sold tires, did delivery, did irrigation, did all sorts of different stuff. So it was, I guess it kind of sort of became a running joke with my friends as far as the job hopping was concerned and how diverse my work schedule had been.
Well, yeah. Well, the thing that's cool about that to me is that when you do different things, and you had mentioned this earlier, you said that you picked up something from each one of those different things that you did. And, you know, I like that. You, even in the fire service, there'll be guys, young guys, and they'll be like, hey, you know, I'm going to be a fireman. And they, what do I do? You know, should I take the fire science class and should I do this and that? And I'm like, you know what? Actually, get a degree in something else. You know, they're not really going to say, oh, you don't have a fire science degree. They're looking for good quality people. And even somebody with a broader range of experience is actually a little more valuable.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you, something happens, you blow out a knee and you have to leave, you know, you don't want all your eggs in that one basket. But, I'm same with me. I did, you know, I did some, you know, I've shared it before, but I did some construction, did some sales, did some other things. And all those things helped me learn and, you know, grow as a person and become a more self-reliant. You know, I think every young man should do some construction in their life.
Yeah.
Every person should do a couple years working for a general contractor.
Working with, at least having a baseline of tools would be fantastic.
Know how to frame a wall, know how to, you know.
What's an actual 45
sink,
degree angle.
Yeah. How to wire an electrical outlet.
Yep. Yeah, oh. There's so much of this stuff that, and I felt fortunate because even graduating in 2001, we still had wood shop. We still had all of the trade classes and whatnot. And those were always the ones that I did the best in. So hands-on stuff was always a thing for me. And the moving from the automotive to the firearm side made more sense to me, especially with service and just what I wanted to do.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, and I've talked to young people today, and, you know, not everybody. I'm not one of those guys that just generalizes, oh, kids these days, rah, rah, you know. But, you know, it seems like a little bit more prevalent today is that right out of high school or whatever, it's like, I want to do a job to change the world, you know. I want to reform, you know, this or that. And you're like, why don't you just get a job so you can support yourself first? That might be good.
Please get some life experience.
Get some life experience. You know, it seems like a lot of people, they want their hobby to be their, you know, their career right off the bat. And, you know, we just talked about that a little bit, that you can do that. But, you know, maybe first off, you know, be able to support yourself and to, you know, pay your bills.
Actually, and get some work ethic.
And then, you know, and then build your build your hobby into a side job. And if it takes off like it did for you, then that's great.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Yep. The amount of work, and going back to that topic, the amount of work that goes into it is going to be absolutely mind-blowing. It's going to be the best 80 to 100 hours of a week you're ever going to spend to avoid a 40-hour work week. And it is absolutely true. You know, and my girlfriend will come out swinging on this one, just the amount of time and energy that I've got mentally wrapped up in this place is borderline unfair to them.
Yeah.
Being a business owner can definitely strain the relationships and whatnot. So it's one of those things where you absolutely have to have everyone on board.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, and you think about it, though, is that, well, there's that saying, you know, work a job that you like, or pick a job, a career that you enjoy, and you'll never work a day in your life, right? Whatever.
Yep.
And some people are like, yeah, right. But really, you see people that go through life and it's like 20 years and they're punching the clock, right? And it's like they're sitting in their easy chair at night watching TV with a, you know, getting drunk. And it's like, you know, do you want just the rat race? You just want to spin a treadmill just to get by to the next week and the next week? Or do you want to do something that you're passionate about, that to me, it's like, that's why I enjoy my job as a firefighter. It's why I enjoy doing this podcast. It's something that it's enjoyable for me. It's something that helps other people, you know? And I think to me, if you're doing something that helps other people, makes other people's life better, you know, in giving you receive, right? That's what Jesus said in the Bible, right? I like that. And when somebody's just, you're just constantly looking to take, you never are satisfied. But for me, I find that when I'm giving out from myself, I feel like I get more back in return.
Yeah. It's the greatest gift that you can get.
Yeah. And so for you, it's, you know, you give a lot to a lot, make a lot of people happy. You make a lot of guys happy. So
I've made a lot of husbands happy and a lot of wives very unhappy, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, but like we've talked about before, have you read the 299 Days book series by Glenn Tate?
No,
he's
not
a great
yet.
Guy. One of my favorite book series, and kind of got me to preparedness a little bit.
Yeah, I have it. It's sitting on my bookshelf at home.
It's great. Well, I'd encourage you to get into it. And you can even listen to it on audiobooks. Cool. But when we talked about this on the show before, but there's a storyline. There's lots of different people that are involved in the storyline, and there's a partial collapse based on an economic collapse of society. And the rule of law is broken down. And this guy lives, he's a well-off guy, you know, as a businessman. And him and his wife lived in this affluent suburb in Bellevue. And as things broke down, they were kind of stuck in there, and they had some off-duty police that were working security for their gated community in exchange for, you know, gold and food and other things that people could provide them. But these people had no idea how society had broken down outside the gates. And they tried to leave to go to their friend's cabin, and they realized they were woefully unprepared. He didn't have a gun or any way to protect his family. And his wife confronted him and said, "Why don't you have a gun?" And he looked at her in surprise and said, "You told me you didn't like guns. You told me that they were scary and bad, and I shouldn't have one." And she looks at him and says, "Well, you should have done what you know you should have done as a man." And I thought, that's a pretty powerful, I mean, I've found that to be very powerful lesson that, you know, somebody that says, "Oh, you know, guns are scary or bad or evil," that and if you don't have security, Bryce was a guest on my podcast, was Green Beret, and that one of his quotes was, "If you don't have security, you don't have anything." He talked about in Afghanistan how they'd go in and want to provide schools and wells for these towns and this and that. And they say, "Well, could you provide security?" And he goes, "Because if you don't, the Taliban's just going to come in and do what they want and take this stuff."
Right.
So I thought that was fairly interesting.
Yeah. I mean, Second Amendment protects a lot of things. It doesn't just protect the First. It doesn't just protect any one singular component. It protects everything.
Yeah.
It is the last tool that we've got.
Yeah.
And, I mean, me being frank, if you can fog a mirror, you should be able to own a gun. That comes on a caveat. Do something stupid, affect someone else's life, liberty, or pursuit of happiness, as far as that's concerned, it's game on. But that's just my simplistic way of thinking as far as how ownership should be.
Well, tell me, why do you think that these people that are convicted of some of these gun crimes aren't being prosecuted? I don't know if you've seen that, but I've seen it quite a bit to where the laws that are actually on the books, and they get some of these people and they don't prosecute them the way they with the laws they already have. Have you noticed that?
I've seen it as far as the news articles are concerned. I haven't done enough research to back up one way or the other.
Sure.
So I'm coming in this one kind of loose.
Yeah.
My best guess would be either wins on the DA side or on whoever's side it is just looking for either easy wins, easy targets, stuff that they know that they're going to be able to get. I don't know whether it's because of demographics or anything else like that.
Yeah, sure. But I got you. And that's kind of a generalization too, but it seems to me that I've seen people pointing that out quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so there is quite a bit of laws on the books. You know, it is illegal to murder somebody or kill somebody.
It's amazing that that rule is broken so often that people would think. But
yeah, well, so then just kind of back, just kind of coming to modern time, you did spend a little time. You worked at another local gun shop in
Western Washington. A little time at Wade's, did a little time at West Coast North when Lance was still owning that shop. And then I left for Williston right before he sold. Still West Coast North, but I haven't been around there in some time.
That's kind of where I cut my teeth, first started shooting a little bit, was at West Coast Armory North out there. So
Yeah.
And then in Williston, that was, you worked in the oil fields out there? That's
yep.
North Dakota?
When Weatherford was still around. I believe they finally bankrupted a couple of years ago. Did inventory control for Wellhead Division. Learned a lot. Spent a lot of hours up loading trucks and working in North Dakota winters and trying to balance being married and all of that. And so
Washington appreciation, huh?
Yeah. And then got called back on for active duty orders. Came back from Williston just right as the West Texas Index started to really dive. And I never actually did go back, stayed on active all the way through the end of my contract. And at that time, the shop had already started in earnest. And then 2018 came around and got out on the last couple of months. The shop had just grown to such a point that I couldn't do both active duty and run the shop at the same time. So that was the big trigger pull on that one.
No pun intended. Nice. Well, so then, okay, so you started out of your home there, and then now you've got a facility in Marysville, Washington.
Yep.
Tell us about how you got the shop there, and was that a big step out move to get that, and was it hard to do? It seems to me like it would be a pain in the rear to try to start a gun store in the Puget Sound area in 2023.
Thankfully, I'm stubborn. this shop had already been on Marysville's radar as far as how we were operating and whatnot. And we've had conversations about moving out into a bigger shop or whether we were going to stay the same size and just keep doing what we were doing until we just had to move or whatever we wanted to do. We were kind of playing it on a day-to-day basis. So the divorce finalized and Chris and I were kind of sitting there looking at each other like, well, we can either keep doing this or we just say screw it and we go big. And so we said screw it. And William with Preview Group had been on the hunt for properties for us, so we ended up, I think we finally hit 10 different spots we were looking at. Some places just flat out wouldn't sell to us, wouldn't lease to us because of what we were doing.
Oh, really? Interesting, huh?
And then we came across 1062, the location that we're at now. Was Barron's fireplace and oven, hot tub display showroom at the time
Sure.
So it was already fairly open, fairly big. The bones of the place we thought were square at the time. So we got into it, had to do some remodel and repair work as far as that was concerned. That all started August 2020. Yeah, perfect time. Yeah, so that was the best 2 years of COVID-priced construction projects I've ever experienced. I think the initial...
Everybody and their brother was buying lumber to build a deck or to...
We got sheets of OSB on the wall. It cost me $74 a board.
Oh, geez.
I think it's back down to like $989 or something like that.
I remember paying $399 or $398 or whatever it was, but at one point back in, I mean, they were talking 90s, but jeez.
So, yeah, I mean, that was a disgustingly big project. Chris and Pat were running the shop up at the old house while I was playing contractor for 2 years.
So you went through there and built it out and did the
permitting,
did the tenant improvements you needed to get it where it is now?
Yeah. Permitted everything out, obviously did everything through the city, pretty much hit a grinding halt cause that was right in the thick of COVID. So, everything just went to a disgusting crawl. We got into the building August 20 with the anticipation of being opened by December 20. Didn't happen, obviously. Lumber prices shot up. Everything shot up. We had to upsize water lines. We had to run all sorts of different stuff. We had to fix different things, smooth things out, wait for permitting. You know, it was definitely a well-earned opening.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I'm a big proponent of buying local. And so when it comes to buying stuff, you know, we all know the big evil beast, the big A, right? A lot of people, it's so easy. Oh, I'll just go in there and click and boom, it shows up my door. Now, I'm not saying I don't buy a lot of stuff off of there, but I always try to buy something local if I can first. If there's a local shop in my town, and I encourage people to do that, right? You keep your local businesses running. When the blue trucks with a smile on them stop showing up at your house because they're just not going out anymore, you want to have those local retailers there. And so especially your local gun store. Now, for me personally, I have a motto is I never leave a gun store without spending some money. So even if I'd to buy a little spring kit for my AR or something, or a little bottle of lube on the wall right there. I went in, I think that was the first thing I bought from Josh's shop was I'm going to spend money on something, you know. You want to keep those people in business. So that's just my little plug for that.
We
so
appreciate it.
Well, yeah, and you, cuz not only do you have the product there that you can go down and touch, and you have knowledgeable people that are in the store that you can talk to. And then I think it's cool too, and we can get into this in a minute too, but just the community of people that are like-minded people that you can spend some time with. So I guess the point I was getting at is that some people think, oh man, I could get this for, you know, $15 cheaper online or something, blah, blah, blah. You don't realize the amount of work and time it takes for somebody to build a business like that and to have that product in stock locally for you to go down there and see and touch and stuff. So I appreciate the work that you put in.
Yeah. It's a labor of love. I mean, it's trying to do this stuff all cash with everything that's going on and trying to stay up on top of everything and trying to be the buyer, the accountant, the paperwork handler, the, you know, inventory controller, et cetera, the amount of rules and regulations that we have to follow have definitely strained everything that's been going on. But everyone's had a smile on their face. Everyone's still trucks on. It's busy. We hit the ground running. And the customers have been all super patient and super cool about it and know what's going on and are just trying to bolster their stores and everything else as far as that's concerned. And we've, especially the last couple of years, the amount of first time buyers coming through.
Yeah.
Or
yeah, tell me about that. Do you find that there's people that maybe years past would have maybe just not even thought about it, but now that there's the threat that right will be taken away from them?
I don't even know if it's so much about rights being taken away as it is so much the new people that we had come through were groups that you wouldn't necessarily, I mean, you can kind of judge some of the colorful hair folks that come through, but that's, you know, I'm quick to judge them and have been wrong on more than a few occasions. So that part's been a little humbling, but the biggest group that we saw come through, especially during COVID, was the domestic violence survivors or women that had restraining orders against loved ones or you know, babies, daddies or whatever. That was probably the single biggest group that we saw increase through.
Interesting. Yeah.
As far as purchasing was concerned. And, you know, at that time, because 594 had gone through and I think 1639 was close in on it as well. The delays in the timelines, the 10-day waiting periods and everything else. And then to find out through some of my, you know, sheriff and jail buddies that these people were being released from jail within 72 hours because of COVID and they had been hooked for, you know, some pretty heinous stuff. So here we are, the people that need the protection the most can't because of rules and regulations.
So the good guys get told they have to mask up. They can't open their business, and they get fired from their jobs. But the criminals get let out of jail.
Yeah, that was pretty much what seemingly was the case.
That was unbelievable what, yeah.
We sold a lot of guns. People were very patient about this stuff, but there was a lot of finger crossing because there were some stories that we had heard that this is not right. We are going in the wrong direction with all of this as far as the rules and regulations are concerned.
Yeah. No, well, that's interesting. Yeah, so then the business went up quite a bit during COVID.
When we could actually get stuff.
Yeah. So did your supply chain during COVID go down too?
Yeah.
How did that?
Yeah. Let's see. So one of the things that we added in fairly early on in the shop, the old shop, was becoming a silencer shop dealer. So we got the kiosk, the fingerprinter, so we could start doing all the NFA items. Yeah. And that had actually carried us because at least suppressors were not flying off the shelf with the quickness that just 9mm and any regular firearms. Sure. I mean, even the it didn't really matter what it was. The only things that were really available as far as distribution was concerned was largely single action. Ammo was impossible to get. Regular firearms were impossible to get through any of the supply chains and that's where the NFAs really kind of came to fruition and came in and saved the day largely, and especially with us, at least our overhead was fairly low being at the old shop, but still trying to get all of the funding together and everything because we didn't have construction loans or anything. We were just doing everything based off of the profits on the shop to build this thing out, and then the rest was history as far as that was concerned.
Yeah.
So,
well, and if you don't mind, I'd like to take a little rabbit trail here. So
yeah,
talk a little bit about suppressors. I think a lot of people call them silencers, right? Or a suppressor. A lot of people don't necessarily understand them very much. And I don't know if you don't mind giving a little education to some of the listeners. What do they actually do? What are the benefits of them? I think a lot of people think that it's illegal to own a silencer or a suppressor.
Yeah. So as far as suppressors are concerned, totally legal in the state for now.
Washington.
Well, for Washington, yeah. Mm-hmm. Legal to hunt with, legal to own, operate, have, doesn't matter. One of the common misconceptions with it is that you think that they need or that you have to have an FFL, which is not the case. We do, for our own, as far as the demos and whatnot are concerned, are part of the FFLs, but what you're actually buying is a tax stamp. So through Silencer Shop, it's $205.
The Silencer Shop, that's a company that you work with that helps facilitate. Yeah, I just think some people might not understand how that works. So
Silencer Shop is basically a distributor down in Texas. They operate basically a network nationwide with these kiosks being all piped and down to their headquarters in Texas. But they handle all of the paperwork processing, they handle all of the fingerprint processing and everything else. So basically the way that we've and how we became the top dog as far as I'm concerned for suppressor sales, at least in this area, was to offer the whole shebang right up front. We have the fingerprint kiosk, we have the notary, we have product, we were bringing in all the demos, we were bringing in and buying everything that we could, because let's face it, you're giving up an awful lot of money for an undetermined amount of time waiting for the government to say yes while it's sitting at this guy's house, and it's a difficult pill for a lot of people to swallow. Again, as far as these items are concerned, they're a safety item, and most other parts of the world, as far as ownership is concerned, they prefer you to actually have them on there.
I was listening to somebody the other day talking about that. Is it Europe or Africa where it's just like, they just use them. Everybody's got a suppressor on there.
Yep.
And why is that? Is it because they want to be a top secret sniper that they're going to go and shoot a gun that nobody can hear?
The other common misconceptions. Yeah. The movie quiet, quote unquote, suppressors and whatnot. There are some that are close to that in the 22 caliber range, but
so they're not actually making it. So when they say silencer, they're not making it silent to where you can't hear it. They're just drastically lowering the decibel level so that it's not going to damage your hearing, right? Or being a nuisance to the people around you, or
Yeah, I believe the OSHA spec on that is 140 decibels, so anything under that is quote-unquote hearing safe. But, I mean, there's still loud cans, there's still calibers that, you know, you are still pushing that threshold and everything, so it's can still be loud. But
sure, and the can is a term for a silencer or a suppressor.
Yeah.
Technical name, suppressor, well known as a silencer, kind of a slang is a can, right? Because it looks like a can on the end of your rifle.
The whisper pickle.
Yeah, nice, the whisper pickle.
So as far as the process and procedure is concerned, you buy the tax stamp, you buy the suppressor, and as far as we're concerned, you can do everything all in one fell swoop. So you come in, you buy the can, you get your fingerprints rolled, you get your photo taken. If there's a notary that needs to be done on a trust, because you can do it either on an individual filing or with a trust. And we do everything in one hit. It's very easy. We get a lot of the fence sitters, and that's the nice part about that, and where the service part of all of this comes to shine. Is the fact that you can have someone that has done the process a lot sit there and be able to guide you through everything without having to sit here and bounce you through to four different locations to go get fingerprint cards, to go get passport photos, to do any of that. So the process as far as it being digital now is a lot easier to use. It's still regulated to hell. Let's face it, you know, they're sitting here, and when e-file came through, because we used to have the traditional stamp filing, and that, you know, we're still got guys that are out 16 months on cans, on paper filing.
Oh, really? Wow.
I mean, and we've got guys approaching 8-9 months, even on e-file. And the government sat here and was like, oh, 90 days, start to finish. Right. Sure. So here we got guys that are still waiting 8-9 months for their cans, and... But that's the worst part of the whole deal is the wait. It's just one of those deals where you have to be comfortable with handing over money and just waiting for an arbitrary amount of time for this background check to quote unquote clear and get a PDF back in your email with your blessing from the government. So
when they submit their information through you, they have to pay for the suppressor there. And they have to pay the tax stamp up front.
Yes.
And now they're on a waiting list.
Correct.
How many people do they have in the ATF working? They hundreds of people there that are processing the whole United States paperwork?
I've never been able to actually find an actual number as far as that's concerned. We heard it was, 35 or 40.
Oh, okay. Somebody had told me that they had 8. Like that there was 4 and then they doubled it to 8, or is that not true? They've got to have more than that.
I know they're split, so when you do submit everything goes to West Virginia first.
Okay.
And then, to my knowledge, the examiner that gets your application is dependent on the serial number. So, as far as the weight's concerned, everything's paid up front. Build your accounts, roll your prints, take your photo, do the notary if we need to, get everything signed and submitted right then and there. And the entire business kind of was supported by that for the last couple of years because of the lack of regular firearms and regular ammunition, and that's just finally starting to come back. But we're still dealing with a lot of shipping issues, UPS and FedEx tripping their way into that whole deal, the credit cards with their codes and everything's creating more issues. And making the business.
So hitting on that a little, it's basically businesses that that are trying to virtue signal, that are trying to say, hey, we're not going to do business with, or we're going to penalize people that are actually selling firearms. That's what you're kind of alluding to, right?
Yeah, and it sounds like that program's been put largely on hold for the moment, but still there. Doesn't matter. People have already thought about it. The plans are already there. Just because it doesn't happen today doesn't mean it's not going to happen. So cash has been king.
You know, it's interesting to me. You see this movement to try to keep people from being too self-reliant. You know, I think at one point it was if people are posting videos about canning online, that they were considered that would be maybe a red flag, that they were some type of danger to, you know, the just anybody that was into preparedness or actually, you know, questioned, you know, some policies of the government, which should be held accountable by the people. That's a pretty sad thing when you start seeing that. And it always makes me wonder why.
Like, what the end goal is.
Why is it? Why do they not want us to be able to protect ourselves? Why do they not want us to be able to defend ourselves? So it's something to think about in preparedness. We try to be balanced in our show and in what I talk about when I teach different preparedness classes. You know, we talk about communications, we talk about medical, mobility. Well, self-defense is one of those pillars, one of those aspects of preparedness. And, you know, like we talked about earlier, you know, you can have all the beans and Band-Aids and bouillon, but if you don't have some bullets to protect that, somebody else could come and take that away from you.
Yep. And there's all those. There's people that are out there that are just like, oh, I don't need to do anything. I'm just going to go raid.
I've heard people say that. Well, not people that I know, but you hear
it. How are you going to stop that?
Uh-huh. Yep. You have all the food. That's great. I have a gun. It's like, okay, well, guess what? You don't think we have some guns too? Yeah. I'm guessing the people that are smart enough to stock up the other items are going to be well prepared in that.
Or they're going to be so heavy-handed that they let off on the medical side, which is another component that we're trying to push into.
Oh, nice. Tell me about that.
So we're working. We've got part of the 4,000 square feet with the shop was the classroom. And right now it's kind of a repurposed office for the most part. But we are actively moving forward with getting the classroom finally set up. We've had some real rudimentary classes just as a dry run type deal. But really kind of the goal is, and we know that the gun laws are always going to change and we're always going to have to fight about that and this, that, or the other. But it made sense to, especially after the last couple of years and how woefully unprepared most are, to finally have something in a city setting where we can actually have classes on basic marksmanship, on beekeeping, on botany, on butchery, on the Victory Garden type setups, and anything else, vehicle maintenance, anything that any Boy Scout would know, or any baseline military member would know, as far as orientation or map reading or patrolling or anything else. We're trying to use this, and it's even going further than just it being a classroom, but it being more of a community.
That's pretty
neat
cool.
Spot.
Yeah.
We have a lot of different things in work. As soon as other components get done in the shop, the office, namely, there's a lot of things and a lot of moving components going that we're pushing hard for that we've been stalled out on, I guess would be the better word. But really just kind of hoping that we can get all of this stuff at least started sooner than later. I don't get a lot of warm fuzzies as far as the condition our world is in and even our state is operating in right now. So I feel like the medical classes, the communications classes, the patrolling classes and everything else, as far as this stuff is concerned, is going to be of utmost importance in a very rapid fashion.
Oh yeah. I'm sure you've heard the meme, the saying, whatever it is, but they show the circle, right? And it's good times create soft men. Soft men create bad times. Bad times create hard men, and hard men create good times. And it kind of is that circle. And I really think that we've had good times for a long time. And I think that sadly there's some soft men that are being created, and it's causing some in leadership in our government. You look at some of the I look sometimes and I see some of these different people, whether it's a former Speaker of the House or, you know, people in a governor of our state or whatever, a president of our country. And I think, are these the best leaders we have? Are these the strongest people to lead at this country? And I just, it absolutely blows me away. But we see what do people like that create? And they create bad times. You know, bad policies create bad times. I was driving into town yesterday and I pulled up at this, just pulling into Everett, getting ready to go to work. And I look over and I see this poor homeless guy and it's freezing out and he's under this blanket and he's not even holding a hand out. He's got a blanket over his head sitting there hunched over shaking. And my heart broke for that guy. And I thought, this is the result of crappy governmental policies. And you get people that are enabled to live in a addictive lifestyle that is horrible for them. And it breaks my heart.
And we're letting it happen.
And we just let it happen. And these people get voted back in, and they give these feel good platitudes, but the policies that they have in place are not helping people.
No.
It enables bad behavior and enables people to stay in that cycle of addiction. And that's a whole other thing. Sorry, don't get me rolling on that.
Nope.
But I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, and you're trying to create a community. And you know, we understand that it takes time to get those things done. So, you know, whether it's on somebody's homestead or in a store that you're trying to build a bigger community and more services for people, I think that's really cool. And I'm looking forward to seeing that, being a part of that community too down the road and stuff. So people that are in Marysville, make sure you go down to Pacific Armament in Marysville, Washington, and support them with your business, and come down and meet good people and make some friends. And met a few guys down there. I met Tim and his other one,
Tim Sherub.
Sherub, yeah. I always pronounce his name wrong. So Sherub is a great guy.
Doug and William and
yeah. Shout out to the guys at the shop there. They've always give good service and deal with people pretty well. So
yeah.
Do you find that it's seems to me to be a challenge to have a store like that with such valuable items that people would want to? Do you find it's difficult to have? Is it a little, makes you a little vulnerable having a gun shop like that? It just seems like that might be kind of challenging.
The thought's always in the back of our mind. When Pat, Chris, and I were getting started and figuring everything out, fortunately, with our background and experience with military and stuff, being able to set everything up security-wise and whatnot was at the forefront of everything, and that also helped move the city stuff along.
You got a pretty good barricade out front, don't you?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yep.
Keep those smash and grabs from.
Yeah. Went down to Pantel Tactical down in Renton when they got hit, built their front end back up and whatnot after the stolen truck went through the back of theirs. So,
yeah.
The security portion of everything on there was a big component of all of that and continues to be. Just in the general setup, as far as the look and fit and feel, is we want it to be a training environment. We want it to look like a training environment. That's why it looks like a shoot house. We've got the rock barriers and everything outside. We want people to feel like it's a safe place to be and to do business at.
Yeah.
And it
feels like that to me, yeah.
I mean, and let's be honest, even if we can get everyone on the same page, or we can at least establish, you know, a core group of people, the like-minded, like that, you know, let's say something does happen, something does hit the fan. I don't know of anyone that's really going to go sit down at City Hall and sit there and knock on the doors asking what to do next. We're going to need to try and find, you know, whether it's the church or whether it's the shop or anything else like that for people to be able to come to link back up with other people that are in that same frame of mind and get through whatever we need to get through.
Yeah. You got some cool stuff in the shop. Tell me about the big screen that you have.
So that is the laser shot system. So we don't have a live gunfire range at the shop. So we went with the laser shot, the curved screen one that you see when you walk in. That's for general public consumption. There's IDP.
I mean, what is it? That's like 6 feet high. How big is that screen?
Yeah, it's like,
it's huge.
16 by 8 or something.
That's pretty
like
cool.
That. Yeah. The curved screen is supposed to be more immersive, which it is. There's IDPA, USPSA style shooting, speed steel. There's CQB classes. There's target recognition. There's basic marksmanship. There's pirate hunting. There's all sorts of stuff that you can do.
So it's like a laser gun that reacts with the screen and does it.
That's it's a Canon projector and a couple of SIG P320s, and we've got conversion kits and whatnot for them to be able to cycle on live fire, and or not live fire, but using a CO2 to drive the slide.
Sure, kind of like airsoft a little bit.
Yeah. But that has been a big hit so far. It's not as big of a hit as I thought it was going to be. The funny part about it is that when we got the shop open and we had this, you know, display, and we were like, yeah, just go ahead and use it. There's so many people that are so skittish about jumping behind that thing to try it out, even just try it out. We're just like, come on, it's fun. We'll run you through it the first time. And then it's either like,
you know what you need to do is you need to charge them.
Well, and that was kind of
if you charge him $5, you'd probably have a line.
That was what Well, that was what the goal was eventually, was we were going to charge for the time. But like right now, we're just trying to get people even interested in just, and it's a training tool. It's all it is.
I'm bringing some guys in this week.
Yeah. I mean, we'd like to set up some tournaments. Make it. There were things and plans that we had in place using this thing, but we also had the flat screen in the classroom too. So the nice part about the flat screen portion is it allows us to divide it up into four shooting lanes.
Oh, cool!
So we basically just get it so that, you know, we'll set it up auditorium style, and then we'll have the screen in there. We can run the classes and everything, and have basic marksmanship or anything else. Still working on that. Just it's a time thing.
Yeah. You got to do what you can do. Well, and right now, I came in the other day. Granted, it was you guys are not open on Mondays. You're open Tuesday through Saturday, right?
Yep, correct.
And I came in on a Tuesday morning, and there was a line from the cash register to the door. Yep. And you guys were taking care of them, and you were cranking people out. And so it's cool to see. So you're taking care of your customers and the needs that they have right now. Yep. And that's making sure they have the security and the ability to protect themselves and their family that they need now before some type of law is put in place, or it's not even a law, is it? Or they're trying to make a law.
Yeah.
HB 1240 they're going to make a law, a new law that's going to basically take away constitutional rights.
Yeah. Make us worse than California in less than 2 to 3 weeks.
No, that's unbelievable.
One fell swoop.
So I appreciate the fact that you may be putting off some of your more funner things that you want to do to keep customers taken care of. So that's important.
Just getting as many people armed up as possible.
I know I got in on a free class that you guys had there. A friend of ours, Tobin, had a class there on how to clean your AR.
Yep.
And so I came in and brought some friends, and he was in back, and he's going over some basic how to clean your AR stuff. And after a few minutes, he kind of looks at me. He goes, "You look like you know what you're doing." I said, "Well, yeah, I do." He goes, "What are you doing here?" I just wanted to come down and meet you and see the shop and be a part of something, that community, right? Yep. And so that was a lot of fun, and got to meet him, and they're good people out there.
Yes, they are.
You have a relationship with Training Northwest, just friendship, friends with them.
Yeah, friends. Yeah, nice. Yeah, Tobin's great. He's becoming more of a frequent flyer at the shop for his stuff. But classrooms open to anyone that wants to put butts in seats or anything that needs to be able to host something. So that's how we got connected as far as that was concerned. And they've got a hell of a thing going out there right now. They've got a lot of classes and everything.
Greg Anderson and
it's great to be able to see that component, especially it being as close as it is to our shop. Mm-hmm. Being able to have more groups, especially closer together, because, I mean, let's face it, we don't have a whole heck of a lot of ranges in this particular area, especially your longer range stuff.
Somewhere where you can actually move, right? And
right.
It's one thing to be able to sit there and look straight ahead and point, you know, shoot slow at a paper target. But is that the way somebody that's involved in a self-defense incident is actually going to be, right? Whether it's trying to stop an active shooter, you know, very rare, or, you know, somehow defending yourself and your family from somebody that's trying to, you know, kill them or you or somebody else. You're going to be moving. You're going to try to find concealment and cover. And so it's going to be a dynamic thing. And so it's nice to be able to have that opportunity.
Yep. And I rely heavily on pushing that type of training out that way to them. Everything that my career was all based off of and everything that I've done up to this point has all been basics. And that was one of the big pushes with the laser shot system, is it took all the live fire, all the live ammunition. We still had regular firearms per se. And what we were wanting to do and basically treating it the same way that we do with suppressors is just being able to have the easiest avenue of approach and training right there. And you can sit there and you can run an entire firearms class with everyone just kind of standing around in the room, and everyone's taking turns on the screen and everything else, but you're still getting the classroom depth and everything else. And then we have the IDPA and USPSA style shooting, and these people start geeking out on it. The couple of classes that we had, but these are all, you know, either very, very inexperienced or very nervous shooters. And they wanted to get more training in and just even in the basics. And that's all I'm focusing on as far as our aspect is concerned. I'm not a door kicker. I didn't know shipboarding or anything else. I'm not pretending like I did. Basics, putting rounds on a target in the square boxes and building the base fundamentals and everything is all that I intend to focus on as far as that's concerned. Where Training Northwest and Tobin and Greg come in as far as, you know, their classes are concerned are a fantastic way to be able to.
Those guys have been there and done that, huh?
Yep. And I wholeheartedly recommend taking classes from them, especially from a live fire and anything else they've got coming down the line. So,
Well, that's cool too, seeing them and their relationship with like Field Craft Survival and Mike Glover and that's kind of cool. And I can see that kind of same thing with your business. You're building that community and more that we can do where we can have fun things that people can get together and spend time with people they want to spend time with. Build relationships with people that are like-minded and have the same goals in life. It's to enjoy our freedoms, to make sure that we're all more resilient, more self-reliant, and having a fun time, right?
Yep.
You know, you get these people that look at preppers and they think of somebody hiding in their bunker like the doomsday prepper, and I'm like, that's not me. The only reason I prep is because I want to keep my fun lifestyle going during the crappy times, right? So that's what it's all about, so. Yep. Yeah, well, that's really cool. Well, anything else? So your shop, I mean, anything else you want to share about that you guys do? People can come down and do you guys do online sales at all with people or UFFL transfers, some of the other services you guys offer?
NFA engraving is a big one. Some smithing repair stuff we're really backlogged on. Really, it's just as far as the retail side is concerned, getting stuff wherever we can. Has been pretty much the main focus the last month, give or take. Everything else is kind of unfortunately taken a backseat, just being shorthanded. So we're focusing on the most immediate needs.
It's understandable.
But repair, and then once we get the classroom and everything sorted out and squared away, we'll get all that stuff rolling in earnest. And we'll start building we're trying to build different avenues of approach just to try and keep the shop going should the laws completely decimate us as far as, you know, the financial support portion is concerned and what we can or can't sell. one of the things we just got into was we have our new line of coffee coming out this week.
Oh, yeah.
So
I saw that on your Instagram. So
yep.
What's your Instagram if people want to follow you?
Instagram is PacArmCom, PacArmCom. There's also a backup page.
Put that on the website. Yeah.
There's also the backup page and everything else that's on there as well. And whether you subscribe to one or the other, we try and keep them regularly posted between the two.
Nice.
So the coffee was another kind of pivot with everything that was going on. Nick, another guy that works for us occasionally, is friends with Jamie at the VFW, and they all got us connected, and we got hooked up with Rousey Coffee Roasters at a startup, and now we have our very own light roast, the Fuck Inslee line, and our dark roast is Tax This Dick. So, you know, we're working on some of the other lingo and whatnot and labeling, but this is a very, very early project, but we'll have the first bags on the shelf in the shop tomorrow.
There's no hiding our feelings towards some of these.
No, not at all. Yeah. Nope. And when it's going to be coffee all day long, take your tea somewhere else.
There you go. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Yeah. So they can pick up their coffee there and
nice. We'll have it on, we've got a machine. And that's one of the other things too, depending on how all of this plays out. As far as the laws are concerned or what we can use the space for, but we're also working on actually developing it into a little cafe as well. So we can keep at least something going so you can get caffeinated or, you know, while you're waiting for your gun or whatever it may be. So, we're hoping to see some pretty strong sales as far as, this stuff is concerned, even just from a political message perspective, or we're all pretty much, as far as our group is concerned, on the same page. So, it'll still help support us one way or another.
Yep. Freedom, liberty, following the Constitution, and supporting the people that are fighting for that.
Yep.
Yep. Sadly, though, I think that, voting in Washington was interesting. Ever since the three times Christian Gregoire and Dino Rossi vote, are you familiar with that one? Rossi won twice, and then they just kept recounting until they got the result they wanted, and that was rather interesting. I don't think since then it's the full mail-in ballots.
And, yeah, it's a joke.
Yeah, no, it's we can keep trying to vote, but sometimes we got to vote with our actions, and sometimes our actions are supporting people that we care about in our communities, supporting our getting out of some of these big systems and forming our own parallel systems that are outside of that. So,
yep.
Yeah, that's good. Well, cool. It's been awesome, Josh, having you. Yeah. It's really fun. I appreciate your shop there being in town. And I encourage people to shop there. And it's got a great vibe, good people. And so if you're in Marysville, Washington, or even anywhere close, get in there and say hi. And make sure you let them know that you heard Josh on the Project 223 podcast. And maybe they'll give you a free sticker or something.
We do have those.
Well, you might have to pay, but it's free if you pay for it. So anyways, no, it's been awesome having you, and you're a great guy, and I appreciate your service to the community by providing local sales and expertise of firearms so that people can continue to exercise their Second Amendment rights, have the tools they need to protect their family, their neighborhoods, and ultimately our country. I think a big part of the reason why we haven't been, anybody hasn't invaded us or pushed to try to come in and have their way with our country is because it's kind of like they talk about it maybe not necessarily being an accurate quote, but it was one of the Japanese generals that said, we don't want to invade the U.S. because behind every blade of grass there would be a rifle.
And there's so, more now than there were then.
There's definitely a lot more now than there was then. And so, to have that, I was on nuclear submarines, and we never launched a torpedo in anger. But the fact that our submarine was out there as a strategic deterrent kept evil people from coming and trying to force their way with us. Mm-hmm. And I believe that firearms are a big part of that, knowing that if I go into this house out here in the country, that they probably got a rifle and a shotgun or whatever, that keeps people from doing bad things. And when the laws fail, when the police stop chasing bad guys, when prosecutors and DAs just let people out without sending them to jail for whatever reason, or they let them loose for COVID, we need to be able to protect ourselves. So we need to be self-reliant. So anyways, great having you. Any final thoughts?
No. We've got the new coffee coming out. Come try it out. Stop by the shop.
Order that online too?
Not yet.
Not yet, but maybe down, maybe in the future?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. We'll see where the grass lies with this one, and we'll expand and do what we need to when we get to that point.
Yeah. Support your local gun shop, everybody. All right. So that's great. Thanks, Josh. Great having you.
Thanks, Brent.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. A great interview with Josh from Pacific Armament Company Gun Shop in Marysville, Washington State. A man standing on the front lines in the battle for freedom and liberty in America. Battle for our liberties that are under attack from tyrannical leaders that are trying to take away your abilities to defend your family, to defend your community from violent criminals and people who would seek to harm you and yours. So support your local gun shop. Stand up against these politicians that are bringing laws and regulations that are unconstitutional and that do not have your best interest at heart. From the Eagle's Nest, standing on the front line with people like Josh, trying to get out a good word, trying to help you be safe and be secured and be prepared for the dangers and troubles that may come. And if nothing else, go down and shoot some laser shot at Josh's shop and have a good time. So from the Eagle's Nest, signing out. This is the Bald Eagle. Have a great rest of the week. Forget Jay Inslee.